Good evening, Toastmasters, would-be Toastmasters, listeners and friends. You're very welcome to the Talk Show for Talkers on IrishRadioInternational.com. Our email address is info@IrishTalkers.com. You can also find us on Facebook as the Talk Show for Talkers. And we welcome your comments, questions, feedback and evaluations. We also have the Public Speaking Weekly, which you can find on our website. And I'm joined, as usual, today by the mercurial Maura O'Brien.
Good evening, folks, or good afternoon, or good morning, depending upon where you are in the world.
Good evening. And Maura has some fantastic news that she may be sharing with us later. And we also have the purposeful Paul O'Mahony. You're welcome, Paul.
Thank you very much, Ted. It's lovely to be working with Maura and Ted again.
Thank you, sir. And my name is Ted Malamphy, and on tonight's show we are going to have the usual mix. We're going to have a word of the week, we'll have a quote of the week, we'll have a little bit from the magazine, because we were all astonished to hear it hitting the tiles in the hall. The February magazine.
We've actually got the paper version in front of us, which is incredible. I think a first, certainly in the last two or three years.
Yes, it's even gone ahead of the January issue, has it?
I think it. Well, I'm not 100% sure of that, but anyway, well done, Toastmasters International.
Well done,
for getting it out.
And we will also have a guest interview, so you will have to come back to the second section of the show for that. We will also have a little discussion on some of the marvellous information that's in the District 71 newsletter that is put out every month by our District 71 PR, Laura Bruce.
Indeed, sir. And Paul, you have a section for us this week on...
I'm going to talk about webinars this week.
That's a very good subject. Well, I'll be talking about body language. So, let's get the show on the road. Paul?
Okay. I'll have your word of the week, yeah?
I do, Ted, and I shall not drivel on about it. I shall not give you a long lecture about it. Okay. And I certainly shall not behave in an aggressive manner on the Talk Show for Talkers.
Only rightly so.
The word of the week, on the other hand, is harangue. Now, first of all, I better spell it in case people mix it up with meringue. This is harangue, and it is not something you eat. Although people have been asked to eat their words after having delivered a harangue. Hmm. So, what's a harangue? It is a noun in the first place.
Okay.
So, it's a thing, right? It's a lecture that somebody gives that can go on, and that is a bit aggressive and a bit too much. Also, it's a verb which says that you can harangue a person, you can speak to them in a long and aggressive style.
Bullying type of thing. Pardon? Bullying.
Yes, indeed, to harangue somebody would be, if you were in the kitchen talking to somebody about a topic and you launched off into a spiel about your point of view on it, after you'd spoken for a couple of minutes without hesitation, interruption or deviation, they might well say, you are a haranguer.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because you can also be a haranguer.
Mm.
And that is not a hanger for keeping airplanes in. It's a haranguer.
I like your play on it.
Now, the word, incidentally... Okay, let me ask you a question. I'll ask you both this. Which came first, the Civil War or a harangue?
Oh, harangue, definitely.
You think harangue came before Civil War?
Yes, most definitely.
Right. Do you have a dissenting view?
No, I would guess harangue is pretty old.
Well, the two, according to one authority I consulted today, both entered the English language in 1533.
Hmm.
And the Civil War?
Harangue and Civil War.
So we
now, let me, a little caveat, I have only researched one source, but it is a source.
Yes.
So there we are. It's before the 19th century. But let me quote you a 19th century thinker of immense importance, especially for our students of the history of the United States, our American brothers, sisters, and nephews, cousins, aunts, whoever. There is hardly... Oh, yes. Just before proceeding with this, I'd like you to translate this into Irish politics.
Okay.
Ted, and Moira translated into British politics, and see if the same sentiments apply, right?
I would hazard a guess here that there is no British politics, but there is English politics and French. Oh, okay. Wake up.
We know what you're saying, Mark.
Scottish and Welsh and Northern Irish. Mm-hmm. Do I sit corrected?
We won't go down that rabbit hole because we could be talking about United Kingdom politics if we're going to bring Northern Ireland into it. However, here we go. There is hardly a member of Congress. So you can substitute the House of Commons or you can substitute the Dáil.
Right.
There is hardly a member of Congress who can make up his or her mind to go home without having dispatched at least one speech to his constituents. Nor who will endure any interruption until he has introduced into his harangue whatever useful suggestions may be made touching the 24 states, the 26 counties, presumably, or whatever, of which the Union is composed, and especially the district, obviously his constituency, especially the district which he represents.
Okay.
So the word harangue is what a politician does when he or she insists upon saying something in Parliament, no matter what, and fights to deliver it and goes on and on.
Right.
Ideally to get reported in the local newspaper.
Yes. Interesting enough, when you asked me the question, and you also asked Myra, what came first, harangue or the Civil War? My answer to you was harangue. For the simple reason that I was looking at it, what the word meant, not when the word was invented.
Uh-huh.
So in other words, you had to have an argument before you arrived at a civil war.
Well, in that case, I would say
would you
arguments,
agree with me?
I think arguments usually precede wars.
Yes, so that's why I said there was a lot of haranguing before there was bullets being fired.
Yes, and the further back we go, the more true that is.
Yes, so that's why I came, that's why I gave you the answer I gave you. But 'twas interesting what you told us, that the war was derived in the same time as the Civil War. So I'm clapping myself on the back because I think I was right.
Well, I mean, you are the linguist among us, especially with your accent.
Thank you very much. It's lovely.
I think we've had enough of the harangue, would you say?
I think so. And I'm going to give you a thought for the week.
It depends. How would you use it in a Toastmaster meeting?
Oh, well, let me tell you that one great way to use it is that nobody expects a Toastmaster to stand up and say, I'm going to harangue you all.
Yes, of course. You wouldn't expect that, no.
You wouldn't?
No.
I mean, you'd be sitting there, so therefore you'd pay some attention.
Yes, of course.
If you weren't leaving the
room.
But
it wouldn't be a Toastmasters Club very long if that was the attitude of the members.
Harangue, yes.
Yes.
Now, it's in a humorous speech competition, of course, in which you're going to deliver a harangue, which I think if it was well put together, it could have people falling around in the aisles.
Yes, and there is a tip.
Or else you could follow it by, a meringue.
That would definitely
I've got a recipe for a harangue here, Toastmasters.
Yeah, excellent, yeah.
Plenty
of egg whites.
I've got a recipe for a meringue.
Very good.
So,
and
there,
the thing about
it,
within Toastmasters, it's also catered for, with a speech we called it, the roast. There's a toast and there's a roast.
And a meringue. So we're really on a food theme this week.
So that's nice.
Tell me now, just a small point here. Will there be a cake used in the next couple of days to celebrate the arrival of a great-grandmother on the show?
But that's a very interesting question. But I think you put it lovely. The arrival of a great-grandmother, it gives you the impression that someone new is being born.
Would you like to interview a great-grandmother, Ted?
I think it is a fantastic achievement for anybody, great-grandmother or great-grandfather. Look at what that person started.
Okay. Now, there's the table topic. Interview.
Beautiful.
Find a great-great-grandmother and interview her for 1 minute.
I think that's... Will you
the timekeeper is counting. I'll be the timekeeper. No.
You'll be the timekeeper.
Find your subject. Are there any great-great-grandmothers in the audience?
Will the audience are those people who are out in the other ether, because we are transmitting via radio, So they're out there. I've no doubt that there are lots of great grandmothers.
Okay, but find a great grandmother. You
know, well, there's only one lady with us today, anyway, so that is the great grandmother, Mara O'Brien.
We'll see if she's.
Mara had the fantastic news yesterday that she has become the proud owner of the title of great grandmother. Her grandson's wife had a baby. Which makes Mara a great grandmother.
Stop talking to me. Talk to her.
Which makes Mara a great grandmother.
I'm sitting here, being very quiet, listeners, because I have the honour to have that title, and he's a gorgeous little boy.
I saw the picture today, and I was saying, "Gosh, that's brilliant."
He's rather sweet, isn't he?
Lovely.
For a newborn, because newborns, generally speaking, are pretty ugly, you have to admit.
Yes, yeah.
But this child, aged, I think he was probably about 6 hours old when that video was taken.
6 hours old, and he was growing already.
Yeah.
If you know this.
Yes.
And considering that all other great-grandchildren are ugly, it's astonishing that you've got a good-looking one.
Well, now, that's, of course, a very sweeping statement to make, and I wouldn't by any means claim that I have the only good-looking great-grandson in the world. I'm sure there are many, many great-grandchildren out there who are equally as gorgeous as mine.
Yes, but I have no doubt that...
But I'm biased.
But I have no doubt when your own children are born.
Will you forgive me, Ted, if I cut across your plans for this show?
Okay.
Could we ask the great-great-grandmother to give us a quote of the week, impromptu, off the top of her head, on the topic.
That sounds very good, all right, sir.
Oh, yes, my God, now that is
unfair.
Really putting me on the spot.
Yeah, the timekeeper is running.
Okay, live for today, for tomorrow we die. And I had the thought that this great-grandchild of mine, will almost certainly be alive in the 22nd century.
All going well, yes.
Now, just think of that. Though his father did say to me that he will be, I think, 110.
Oh, the father will be?
Yeah, 108.
So the father at the moment is 30 years of age?
He'll be 26 this year.
Right.
I think it's 25 this year.
Very good.
Yeah. So, that's my thought. My thought is live for today.
It's lovely.
For tomorrow we die.
But it must be a very uplifting experience to know that you're a great-grandmother.
Well, it is, and I'm looking forward to being a great-grandmother, which, you know, could happen in 20 years.
Of course, it could, John,
and I will still be the right side of 100. So,
yes, yeah. Yeah. And the way things are going now, as far as I'm concerned, I was at a meeting the other night and I heard a person making reference to 54 being middle-aged.
Oh, no way.
So, 54...
54 is still young.
But was middle-aged, which means that my expectation now should be to live to at least 108.
Oh, absolutely. You know?